1,000 planets and spreading out.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
To the Batmobile.
May the force be with you.
Who is that masked man?
Avengers, assemble.
And good afternoon, and welcome once again to the Fantastic Forum. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell, and for the next hour, we're going to excite, entertain, elucidate, and educate you with news, information, and exciting discussion about your favorite geeks. This is Fantastic Forum, and it's time to feed your geek! We're going to begin with some genre-related news. Variety reported yesterday that former Felicity star Keri Russell is in preliminary talks to join the cast of Star Wars Episode 9. The movie will be directed by J.J. Abrams, who was asked to step in following the departure of Colin Trevorrow last fall due to creative differences. You know, that's a term they use when people just aren't getting along. So, Abrams directed the first installment in Disney's Star Wars series, The Force Awakens. Abrams and Russell most recently worked together on Mission Impossible 3. Reportedly, Lucasfilm executives and Abrams have met with several actresses during the past 2 months, and they zeroed in on Russell immediately prior to the Independence Day holiday earlier this week. The role is action-heavy, and Russell's work on The Americans, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and the aforementioned Mission Impossible evidently qualifies her for the role. Streaming service Netflix announced they will be debuting a new Ultraman 3D CGI anime series. The iconic Japanese superhero has been a fan favorite for over 50 years. Wow, that's a lot of alliteration there. Details are scarce, but it seems the show will be available in spring of 2019. You can take a look at the premiere poster on the Fantastic Forum Facebook page at facebook.com/Fantastic Forum. While you're there, if you haven't already liked us, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We love to be liked and we like to be followed. There is a science fiction convention going on here in the DC Baltimore region. Shore Leave 40 is this weekend in Hunt Valley, Maryland, one of the most highly regarded fan-run conventions. The show features some terrific science fiction and literary guests. Also, some great media guests this year. In fact, William Shatner is just starting a Q&A right about now. He's only there today. But you can get additional information on the convention, which runs through tomorrow, at shore-leave.com. Yesterday, a judge granted a restraining order to Stan Lee and his family against memorabilia collector Kia Morgan. Morgan is accused of isolating Stan from his daughter and others in an effort to gain control of the comic icon's business affairs. Now, it seems like that's the part where we ought to cue the Snidely Whiplash music, right? And there's some convoluted drama to the situation as the same judge earlier in the day dismissed a previous protective order on the grounds the filing attorney did not represent Stan. That attorney, Tom Lallis, was apparently fired in February, yet appeared in court yesterday requesting that the existing restraining order be extended. Kia Morgan is alleged to be placing harassing calls to Stan Lee, his daughter J.C. Lee, and brother Larry Lieber. Morgan is also facing misdemeanor criminal charges for allegedly placing two false 911 calls in May. The first call, he reported that intruders had entered Stan Lee's home when, in fact, it was police who had come in response to a report of elder abuse. In the second, Morgan claimed assault with a deadly weapon against a security guard who had refused to sign a non-disclosure agreement. More on this case as it develops. And some sad news this week, as reclusive comics artist and writer Steve Ditko has died at the age of 90. Ditko was the co-creator of Spider-Man and Doctor Strange for Marvel. He also created the characters The Creeper, The Question, and Hawk and Dove. He had worked for Charlton Comics, along with a whole bunch of other smaller independents. The guy was an absolute comics genius. He apparently was discovered in his apartment on June 29th and is believed to have died about 2 days earlier. No cause of death has been announced. And I'm going to want to talk a little bit more about Steve Ditko later in the show, but he was a singular and unique comics talent, never got the credit to which he was actually entitled. It's a shame he was so reclusive, because I really was trying to get to him to talk to him. But he granted very few interviews, and, you know, so one can only wonder what he would have had to say about a lot of stuff that's going on. Anyway, so on today's show, we're talking comic book weddings and marriages, most recent being this past Wednesday in Batman issue number 50 with nuptials for Batman and Catwoman. But super people get married, divorced, and even have their marriages erased by Mephisto with some frequency. And we'll be talking about all of that today. I'll introduce our guest panel in just a moment, but before that, we have the official spoiler-free review of the latest movie from Marvel Studios, which just opened yesterday, Ant-Man and the Wasp. The movie earned $11.5 million in Thursday night previews, added another $33 million on Friday, and is poised for an opening weekend take of over $50 million. The preview night gross is ahead of the first Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, Thor: The Dark World, and Guardians of the Galaxy. So, here is our review, and we'll be back with the discussion in just a moment. Ulysses Campbell for Fantastic Forum. Ant-Man and the Wasp is the first movie from Marvel Studios since Avengers: Infinity War. With all eyes towards next year's release of Infinity War Part 2, I wasn't sure whether this movie would be set before or after the catastrophic events of the Avengers' battle with Thanos. As it turns out, this movie is set before, although there is an after-credits scene in which Marvel advances the storyline to intersect with Infinity War. Another distinction for the movie is that it is the first entry from Marvel Studios to feature a female heroine in the movie's title. Audiences can expect more diversity and inclusion in future installments from Marvel, with Captain Marvel due next March, which features a female co-director and music composer. And Marvel Cinematic Universe architect Kevin Feige has promised more females behind the camera going forward. Ant-Man and the Wasp benefits from having a female lead. Evangeline Lilly has considerably more to do here than in the original 2015 Ant-Man. Her increased role was teased in that movie's post-credits scene and is directly in line with the significance of Ant-Man and the Wasp, who were founding members of the Avengers in the comic books. Lily is a great actress and does an outstanding turn as Hope Van Dyne, daughter of Hank Pym, played by Hollywood veteran Michael Douglas, who reprises his role, and Michelle Pfeiffer as Janet Van Dyne, the original Wasp. Also returning is Paul Rudd as Scott Lang, the second Ant-Man. This is the audience's first look at Lang since the events of Captain America: Civil War, and we learn early on that he cut a deal to stay out of jail after having helped the fugitive Avengers led by Captain America. Everyone you liked from the first Ant-Man movie is back. Michael Peña, T.I. and David Dasmalchian as Lang's friends, Judy Greer and Bobby Cannavale as Lang's ex-wife and her new boyfriend, and Abby Ryder Forston as Lang's daughter, Cassie. There are plenty of new faces, too. Along with Pfeiffer, we have Walton Goggins as criminal antagonist Sonny Birch, Hannah John Kamen as criminal antagonist The Ghost, Lawrence Fishburne plays Dr. Bill Foster, and Randall Park is FBI agent Jimmy Woo. I particularly enjoyed seeing these last two characters, given their history in the comic books. Bill Foster was a superhero known as Black Goliath, and Jimmy Woo, one of the first prominent Asian heroes, initially in the FBI, and ultimately joining S.H.I.E.L.D. Also noteworthy is that one of the villains is a woman. Another thing I really liked about this movie is the way that it nods to the comics with the inclusion of familiar characters. And it has some terrific gadgets and gear that will remind comics readers of stuff that the Fantastic Four's Reed Richards might have built. Peyton Reed returns as director. Reed was tapped to direct the first Ant-Man movie after the studio and Edgar Wright parted company, amidst creative differences. One has to imagine Reed was grateful to have the opportunity to shepherd the creative process from the beginning. And the movie bears his comedic leanings. In fact, it could easily be described as an action comedy. That Marvel continues to blend laughs with serious material keeps them in favor with the viewing audience by making the movie-going experience all the more enjoyable. Screenwriters Chris McKenna, Eric Summers, Andrew Barrer, Gabriel Ferrari, and Paul Rudd combine for an action-packed script that keeps the audience on the edge of their seats. Also returning is composer Christoph Beck with a delightful score that accentuates what you see on screen. Of course, the effects are exceptional, as would be expected from a Marvel Studios offering. With a runtime of only 1 hour and 58 minutes, it comes in shorter than most Marvel movies, although it feels a bit longer. And that's not a bad thing, and I guarantee you won't be checking your watch. Although it has a PG-13 rating, you may take even younger children without reservation. There was nothing potentially objectionable language or sexuality-wise. Only some plot and character inconsistencies have caused me to score the movie overall as average. But still a fun night out at the movies, and better than the original. 2 stars out of 4. Ulysses Campbell for Fantastic Four. And there you have it, the official Arlington in... Oh, listen to me. The official Fantastic Four. Do I know what show I'm doing? No, I really don't. Okay. Yeah, so the official Fantastic Forum review of Ant-Man and the Wasp, which opened yesterday in theaters nationwide. All right, so I'm joined today by Brian Lyles and Mike Lunsford and the ever wonderful and fantastic Emily Witten. So, hey, before we get started, Emily, because, you know, of course, you're an attorney and you are an incredibly high-powered attorney, you could go and argue in front of the Supreme Court, in fact.
That's true. You are so incredibly high-powered. Now so, I'm wondering what you're going to ask me next. That's true.
Your legal opinion. So this business I promise, it's a softball. This thing with Stan Lee, because had the one attorney who apparently, when this initial restraining order was filed, did not actually represent Stan, and that was part of the reason that the judge struck that restraining order down before instituting this other one, that the other attorney who came forward and, you know, had a declaration from Stan that, you know, authorized him to act on his behalf, because even he isn't apparently the attorney of record, who is somebody else.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming this other guy is with this firm. So
I mean, to be very, very broad about it, you have to have standing if you're going to bring something into court, and you have to be representing somebody who has standing. And so the attorney who wasn't representing Stan anymore didn't have any ability to be there with an actual issue to raise with the court. But I'm really just curious overall as to why did that attorney come in there at all? Did he not know he was no longer working with Stanley? There might have genuinely been some miscommunication, because I don't think as an attorney I would stride into court and be like, here's this thing, if in fact I had been like let go. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder what was going on there. And there have been a number of issues with harassment/restraining orders/allegations with the person you mentioned and also some other people, and I have no idea what's going on. It seems like some sort of three-ring circus has sprung up, and I hope that Stan Lee is being cared for as an elderly person who, you know, has a large estate, etc. I hope someone's looking out for his interests.
Yeah, well, and you hit the nail right on the head, and, you know, I know there have been a number of people both close to Stan and sort of in his periphery, who that was how that whole elder abuse claim, you know, guy. I mean, because people forget the guy is like 95 years old.
I've met some of the people involved in this. And so I'm like, really, what's going on over there? Because at some point anyway, this seemed kosher, you know, this seemed like it was okay. So,
Well, as you point out, he has a large estate and a number of people. Because and everybody has, I mean, I got a personal situation, you know, my family, you know, that type of thing, too, where, you know, people get elderly and, you know, all of a sudden, if they have any sort of resources or assets, you know, there are those unscrupulous individuals who feel like, oh, this elderly person is an easy target. Mm-hmm. You know, so,
and we're not, none of us pay attention enough to our own mortality. I'm an attorney and I really need a better will, you know? And I mean, at some point, maybe when you're young, you don't have a lot of assets and you don't have a lot of things and, you know, doesn't matter who they would go to. Maybe your parents end up with them or something like that. But as you get older and you make money and or you gain collectibles, if you're this audience listening to this show, you maybe have, like, if I were to go, I would want someone to know that my Deadpool collection is not to be given to the nearest yard sale. It's like, you know, my near mint to mint signed everything from, you know, day one of Deadpool's appearance to the present is worth something. Mm-hmm. And also I would want someone to look after my hamster, you know, so
there you go.
You know, more importantly, if you have an estate with, you know, valuable items and money and stuff, you really should be doing something about that. And even having a basic online will, if not something greater than that, even people who go to attorneys and get wills, if they haven't updated them in a while, when they pass away, like my grandmother passed away and her will was pretty clear, and still there were questions about how to handle it, because it wasn't just one person, you know, executing the estate. So it's all very complicated, and I can imagine Stan Lee's estate and all of his assets and all of the entanglements with different legal entities that he's, you know, probably got, probably really challenging, requires a team of lawyers, and maybe this one just didn't know that he wasn't on the team anymore.
Well, I certainly hope it was that rather than I'm going to try to ingratiate myself here somehow. But
see, also possible.
But you see, and you know, people tune in and they're expecting to hear all sorts of geek related stuff, and you get good legal advice. So there you have it.
I am not your lawyer, that's my disclaimer.
but it's good to think about as a general practical thing. I was going to say, you know, purely for entertainment purposes only.
That's right.
Consult a licensed attorney who represents you before making any actual determinations.
That's the whole problem. Anyway.
Oh my goodness! All right. Well, and hey, and it's a strangely enough, it's a legal contract that we're talking about here today in terms of marriage. And you know, so yeah. Hey. Whoa, that's not the right one. Hey, Mike, are you with me?
I am, yeah.
Okay, there you are. Okay, I had gotten a little nervous because he hadn't heard you. So,
can I tip something in real quick here to what Emily was saying?
Yeah, by all means. Go ahead.
So the only reason that I have any experience with this whatsoever is being in the military, because I joined like right after 9/11 happened, and that meant you were pretty much going overseas. Going overseas, you have to create a will, because if, God forbid, something happens... they need to know where your money, because there's like a basically like a life insurance policy that they put on all soldiers. So they got to know where it goes to somewhere. So at like 19, you know, fresh off of getting like my head shaved and like, you know, here's all your camouflage stuff to wear. They're like, oh, by the way, if you die, who do you want your money to go to? And it's just like, it becomes a very like strange occurrence to happen that young, but it's just weird that she was like, most people don't think about that. And I'm like, I actually had no choice and I had to. I had to sit down with a lawyer and do it. Like, it was weird. So yeah, just odd moment there. Sorry.
No.
Well, and I think a lot of people start thinking about it either when they get married or when they have a child, or if they have a child and are married, they've done one, you know, hopefully, whatever the case is. But once you have someone else that is maybe not your parent or something,
dependent,
or a sibling, and there's a dependent or a partner, I think that's when people start to really look at it if they haven't already. Everyone should.
indeed.
Including me.
Again, throwing out that disclaimer.
Yeah.
Okay, so marriage and weddings. I mean, of course, you know, they're some of the big ones that come to mind in terms of, well, characters who are still married, you know, like Reed Richards and Susan Richards. And the aforementioned Stan Lee, you know, one of the things that apparently was important to him was breaking from convention, and how, instead of that whole, in fact, I remember in what was it? One of those early books that he wrote about the Marvel Universe that I snatched up when I was like 12 years old. And he was saying, yeah, instead of that old convention, yeah, she might really dig the guy if only she knew his true identity. We were going to have a hero and heroine who were actually married. And I said, oh, well, yeah, okay. You know, why not? It took them a few issues to actually get them married. They did not start out that way. And they, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby made the wedding of Sue and Reed a big event. In fact, that was one of the first big crossover type events, and all the characters were in it and all of that. So,
But yeah. They couldn't get in.
Yes. Yes. And I thought that was really funny how in that movie they actually had Stan Lee, yeah, and they were like not letting him in. I said, boy, you know, everything comes around eventually. So what you know, so that's the one I'm going to throw out. But what are some of the other noteworthy weddings that that you guys thought about?
Well, of course, I immediately said Lois and Clark, you know.
Ah, yes.
Lois Lane and Superman. Yeah.
And wasn't that a shock that they even got married?
Oh, I mean,
you know, boy, it's like, are they ever going to get these two married? And,
took you know, them a long time.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because it was, she did marry Clark Kent and not Superman.
And not Superman, and, you know, as it should be.
Well, I guess, but, you know, all right. So, all right. Well, Brian, what about you?
I thought of, let's say, this one I felt was kind of forced. I don't know, because Storm and Black Panther.
Mm. Hey, they're both black. Yeah. They're both from Africa. Yes. Let's get them married. Yes. Perfectly normal.
I felt like that was the most forced relationship ever, you know, because, you know, you just didn't picture them together. And Storm's her dealing with the X-Men for a long time. And a lot of people were looking for, like, some of the relationships she had with among the X-Men, like Wolverine or whomever.
Right, like, but you're already hanging out with these people.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you hook up with Black Panther all of a sudden? So,
you know, the bigger question is, how in the heck did she hook up with Wolverine? Yeah. I mean, that one was crazy to me. When I heard about that, it was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh, Wolverine's had some interesting relationships over the years.
Yeah, so, and just recently, you know, speaking of X-Men, Rogue and Gambit. So
I saw that, you know, because there was a wonderful graphic that you put together to promote this episode. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Rogue and Gambit got married?
Yeah.
I was like, what the heck? I didn't even know they were dating.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but that was all like sleight of hand because of whatever.
No. What were you going to say?
Okay, so like it wasn't, okay, so they did end up getting married, but it was at Colossus and Kitty Pryde's wedding. So it was like, I mean, spoiler, holy crap, like, don't, if you haven't read it yet, like, plug your ears or something. But, like, Colossus and Shadowcat are getting ready to get married, and Kitty has cold feet. And she's like, I don't know if we can do this, because I'm just not sure if we're ready for this sort of thing, because who knows what's going to happen, you know? Like, we're X-Men, you know, for crying out loud. Something crazy could happen. And basically, Gambit hears that and was just like, well, that's the exact reason why me and Rogue should be married, and proposes to Rogue right there on the spot. So it was like, I didn't like it because it was very like sitcom-y. Hey, see, we just tricked you, huh? Oh, but we tricked. And it was just like, really, come on.
Wait, so did Peter and Kitty, yeah, I'm sorry. So did they actually get married in that?
No.
They didn't.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, and you know, I'll tell you something. That happens more frequently than a lot of other situations too, where the publishers tease a wedding, and they tell you there's going to be a wedding, and then you buy that issue, and there ain't no damn wedding, and you're like, wait a minute, you know, come on, you guys.
Wasted money.
Yeah, I mean, they do that. I mean, shoot, they even did that in the TV series in the last season of The Flash when they had the big DC crossover episode where, like, it was what was it, Earth X, I think is what it was.
Oh yeah, yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Barry and Iris were supposed to be getting married.
Yeah, that's right. He was marrying Black Iris.
Yeah, Black Iris. And it all fell apart because of Nazis. You know.
That's how most weddings go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Watch out for them damn Nazis, boy, I tell you.
My marriage has been ruined by Nazis, man.
All right. Well, okay. So,
but did we already mention also Peter Parker and Mary Jane? Did we get to that one yet?
Oh, we haven't gotten to that one yet. You know,
because I was going to say that. And speaking of Ant-Man and Wasp, Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, isn't that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the comic book version versus the movie version.
Yeah, really.
You know. So
you also got Cyclops and Jean Grey, which was X-Men number 30 when they re-released it under Jim Lee. So
wait, so they actually got married?
They did indeed.
Okay, wait a minute. So this is
for
like,
how long? Oh, sorry. Okay.
Well, no, but this is all right, because I quit reading the X-Men years ago, and as a matter of fact, when X-Factor came out, and like again way back in the way back, X-Factor came. Two things happened. Three things happened that made me stop buying the X-Men. One was I got tired of Chris Claremont's writing. I mean, everything was nigh invulnerable organic steel, and you know, I just got tired of that phrase. Really, really tired of that phrase.
Speaking of Cable, what?
There you go. All right. Also, there was the fact that X-Factor came out, and I could read about the original X-Men and X-Factor, and Wolverine got his own book, and I could read about Wolverine in that. And I'm like, well, why am I still buying this? Okay, well, let me not. So, all right, so Jean Grey came back from the dead, and then she and Cyclops got married.
Yes. But let's not forget Madeline Pryor, who's in the alternate timeline, and am I not correct? And that's Cable's mother, actually, isn't it?
Technically, she's still in the timeline because she was the Black Queen.
Right, but she's like the clone.
Yes.
She's the clone, and that's Cable's mom. And Cable is, you know, Nathan many, many names Summers. And while he's not married, speaking of Cable, Deadpool got married to Shikla with Queen of the Dead. Isn't that her title? You know, so there's some marriages going on in that X family and the associated friends that are also bromancy, you know?
Nah, that's true. And in fact, wait, because isn't, Charles Xavier has a son.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, they got the Legion. Yeah. Yes, all right. Yeah. So who was his mom? Can anybody tell me
who
his
mom? Does anybody know? I'm blanking.
Wasn't it Moira MacTaggert? Wait, no, that was Proteus, and that wasn't Charles Xavier.
No.
Hang on, let me consult the internet.
There you go.
Right. Really? I was going to say, this is when we need people to call in and be like, how can you be on this show? You've forgotten who Xavier's wife/lover who produced this, you know.
Her name is Gabrielle Haller.
Dude,
oh, Gabrielle Haller.
I remember.
Okay, no, and I know that name, and now I'm like, why do I know that name? But she was, I think she was hanging around with them, unless I'm mixing her up with somebody else, but I think she was hanging around with Xavier and Magnus, like in the early years, when he was
working in an Israeli psychiatric facility.
Yes.
She was one of his patients. Ah, Professor X, what are you doing?
Oh, wait, didn't he also have some inappropriate thing with Moira MacTaggert where there was mind wiping stuff?
That's all he does is inappropriate.
I know, right? That's really inappropriate.
Like when we find out when him and
Magneto
Professor? Joined to become Onslaught, and he basically admits to Jean Grey that he's had a thing for her ever since she was one of his students from the beginning. And I'm like,
oh, that's so gross.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Professor X, Me Too movement. Oh. What are we doing? We should forget. Well, we shouldn't forget. We should point out and cry about it. Yeah, could we do that?
It is definitely time for some kind of mind wipe.
Better to acknowledge, talk about, and call it out than to mind wipe it, but still, Professor X, come on.
Well, and you know, you have these hopes that these characters are going to be better. unfortunately, the people working in the industry themselves, and you know, there was a lot of stuff that that came out about hey, men are going to harass, apparently that is a problem. And you know, so this has been a problem even in the comics industry. So
I think there's just not enough education out there about what healthy relationships are. That's another topic for another time, but I think that people writing these stories haven't actually sat down and figured out how to be in good relationships, and then they write stories and they propagate things, and they could be good things, they could be not things, but they could also just be whatever that person's experience has been. It might not be a model for that kind of thing.
Well, which kind of leads into, speaking of marriages now, is Hank Pym and Janet and their abusive relationship that was featured in their storyline. I think that when that came out, it kind of like gave the readers an understanding of about, you know, spousal abuse and things like that, which I think it's based off of comic books, which you should be need to expose that and let people see where the storyline goes between them two. Because, and I think in adjacent to the movie, I kind of, even though you never saw it, you saw the more sense of Hank Pym of being sort of, he misses Janet because based off the situation that they went through during their last mission. And I felt that, okay, I get the sense that he did love her. But I also got the sense of the actual Hank Pym I understand through, like, Black Goliath and him stating the fact, oh, he's just a jerk. He's just over, you know, authoritarian. He just wants things to get done and all that stuff.
They had some interesting reflections on who he used to be and who he is. And, right. I mean, his own daughter kind of hates him when it comes down to it in the beginning because he doesn't know how to relate to people in a healthy way.
Right.
And so he's pushed her away. You know, he lost his wife. We don't know in the movie if there was ever any physical interaction or if they had a better relationship than is shown in the comics, you know, way back when. But he definitely has those gruff sides that come out, which is interesting to see. And yet was still sometimes, you know, very empathetic and warm and fuzzy in certain ways.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, that musical cue means that it is time for us to take a quick break. But we're going to be back to the scintillating discussion in just a minute. Of course, I need to remind everybody that WERA is a community radio station and that we are non-commercial. And we rely on the ongoing generosity of our underwriters, our sponsors, and listeners like you for the totality of the operation of the radio station. You can find out all about WERA by visiting the website at WERA.fm. You can also stream the content if you happen to be outside the listening area, but we've got a program scheduled, and this is information on how you can get involved in this ongoing successful experiment in community radio. So I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. This is Fantastic Forum, and we'll be back with our exciting discussion about marriages and weddings in comics coming up right after this. Stay tuned. And we are back here on the Fantastic Forum. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I am joined today by Brian Lyles, Mike Lunsford, and Emily Witten. And we are talking weddings and marriages in comics. So, Emily, you were right in the middle of a sentence almost.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I was saying is I wanted to go back to what Brian was saying and explore the idea that there was an outcry about, you know, showing Hank Pym slapping, hitting, backhanding, whatever you want to call it, his wife, hitting in some various way. I think it was like a backhand. If I remember that iconic panel. And like on the one hand, where Brian was saying, and I agree that comics can be a storyline to explore, you know, darker subjects like abuse, etc. But at the same time, people don't want to see their superheroes doing that. And when I think of issues like that being explored, I think more of independent comics, you know. But if we're talking about what we've been basically sticking to the superhero marriages and weddings and
the mainstream
superhero stuff, I think it's, I'd be interested to hear what you all think as well about how to do that or if it's really the right venue for it.
I think it is. You need, that's why I catered toward Marvel a bit more, you know, when I was younger, because it had the realism. It had the sense of, you know, the real world. You know, not everything is Gotham City or Metropolis. This is New York. We're in Cleveland. We're in Baltimore. You know, we're in these actual cities here. And and when that storyline came out, it was kind of like, it was a big shocking deal because you would never expect it. And I felt like, okay, this is an interesting avenue. To see, you know, I wouldn't say Ant-Man was a beloved character, but just to see an evolution that you never see in comic books. Another character I felt like was kind of interesting was, and this does relate to the topic, you know, when Sue and Richard split.
Oh, yeah.
And, Sue became Malice.
Well, okay, wait a minute. That was like, because they split a couple of times.
True.
That whole
Civil
thing.
War was a different kind of split, but, and I thought that was a really interesting ideological disagreement that they had within their marriage and figured out how to work it out. Indeed. I mean, in the end, you know, Reed was also wrong. But, I mean, he didn't know that what was going to, you know, the consequences were going to be of what he was doing necessarily. But I thought that was really interesting because that was an instance where they were reasonably happily married, had the family that they valued and everything. And at some point, Sue was like, but we're making the wrong choices. I can't support this. Yeah. I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to fight my family. I am taking myself out of this equation. But she comes back to protect people, which is, of course, what superheroes are supposed to do. And so I think it's just it was more like she was setting her moral boundaries within the relationship and saying, you know, I still love you. I still want to be there for our family, but I can't support the choices you're making. Although, I guess there's some disagreement over whether he was right or wrong. But either way, you know, she had to stand up for what she thought was morally right and did that in a way that still respected their marriage. You know, it wasn't like she walked off in a huff, never to be seen again. It was like, I can't be a part of this thing. Yeah. And you know, that could be a thing in normal marriages, but also this was an epic storyline. So well, there was one a clear line.
Well, wait, one thing I want to point out in the whole schism in the marriage of Hank Pym and Janet, that really wasn't supposed to happen. And Jim Shooter said later, part of the issue was Bob Hall, the penciler, on that particular issue, Avengers 213.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he, I mean... What Shooter wrote was, I mean, he didn't mean to hit her, but what Bob Hall drew was, he smacked the crap out of her. Get away from her, you know? And so when, you know, Shooter saw it, it's like, wait, there was an intentionality to this that I didn't write, you know? And that changed the whole dynamic of everything going forward and kind of jacked up Hank Pym as a character for going forward for a number of years.
It's all about the nuance.
Yeah. Well, unlike in the Ultimates when, you know, Hank put ants on her and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was just...
complete torture.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, they took it to the nth degree.
That's hideous and I'm glad I didn't read it. Hey!
You know, there wasn't... the Ultimate universe was interesting, but ultimately... It wasn't something you needed.
I saw some different ads for different storylines in it, and just none of them ever grabbed me, so I don't think I've... I think I read, like, one issue of something Deadpool-related, and he showed up, and he wasn't really Deadpool, he wasn't really funny, and I was like,
It was annoying in general. Like, when you have to... when you make Doctor Doom have goat legs, there's a problem.
Okay, wait, now I want to read it.
Wait, he's got goat legs? I'm totally in.
I mean, Spider-Man. If it's going to be completely ridiculous, yes, but it doesn't sound like they meant it to be ridiculous.
Well, yeah, Spider-Man was the most interesting thing I thought about that, but the Fantastic Four stuff was okay, too. Mike, were you reading that?
What, the Ultimate stuff?
No, I mean, Ultimate Universe stuff.
Yeah, I read a lot of it, and overall, because puns are funny, I ultimately wasn't happy with it. It was just, I felt like, have you ever watched a remake of a movie or a TV show or an interpretation of a book that you really, really, really loved, and they start doing things to change it, but not to update it or anything like that, but just for shock value, or just to, like, make it seem, like, edgy, and that's what I felt like they were doing with the Ultimates. It was like, hey, check this out. We're going to make, again, going back to Dr. Doom, we're going to make Dr. Doom have goat legs. Obviously, that's an analogy for the devil. Like, okay, we get it. Don't be so ham-fisted with it. Like, have some nuance. Have some, like, creativity instead of just being like, we're going to do this thing and it's going to be so obvious we're beating you over the head with it. Like, it just wasn't...
I'm now comforted I didn't read it because that's pretty much what I got from the promos. And so that's why I didn't read it. I guess I didn't really miss out. Maybe the Spider-Man stuff. I don't know. But
it was like, did you like story nuance? You do? Okay, well, we're not going to do that.
Hey, I think it's all about selling the comic books. Good gracious. Oh, yeah. You know?
And that's what it was. It was just like, it was like comics for dummies, you know, like those, that series they have, like IT for dummies. It was like the Marvel Universe for idiots. Like, it was the good that came out of it was the Marvel zombie stuff that they did.
Now, did anyone get married, and were they zombies when they got married? That's what I want to know.
That would have been so much better.
Nobody got married, now that I think. Well, excuse me. You had Hank and Jan who were already married.
Okay, okay.
But nobody got married.
They were too ultimate for that.
Yeah. You know, and the zombie stuff was really weird. I mean, but they bridged to the original Marvel. To the Ultimate Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, it gave a whole new term to the Frightful Four. But it was, seriously, it was their version of the Frightful Four. And they were the zombified Fantastic Four.
Mm.
And Zombie Reed reached out to Ultimate Reed, and Ultimate Reed thought it was like Earth 616, like the cool, all right, Fantastic Four.
Oh, no.
And it turned out to be Zombie.
I'll eat your brain, Fantastic Four.
Yeah, hey, we're trying to find a new source of brains.
I don't like zombies. I mean, yeah. I watch Walking Dead, but I still don't like zombies.
It was really, really scary and very uncomfortable.
And you shouldn't marry dead people, unless you're Deadpool, in which case you did marry sort of a dead person, Queen of the Dead, Queen of the Damned, you know, she's pretty scary.
All right, wait. So, because all I know of Deadpool is what I've seen in these movies. So, was that like the character that What's-Her-Face was playing and she was just dead when they got married?
No. Copycat, Vanessa in the comics was Copycat and had powers, and what they did in the movie is she doesn't have powers, but they gave like a kind of a shout out to her. Spoiler alert, since things change, maybe she comes back and somehow that changes things, but I doubt it. But they gave her that white streak of hair because Copycat had white hair and like blue skin, and then she was a shapeshifter. Deadpool and Shikla was much more recent, and that was like in the last 2 years.
What happened to Vanessa in the comics?
Oh, she died.
Oh.
In the comics. I'm 99% 0.9% sure she died. I mean, somebody, what was his name? One of the old school villains killed her in one of the original things. Yeah,
I bet Wade took his time with that guy.
He was very depressed. You know, Wade's a Deadpool. Wade. He's had a lot of weird relationships. Speaking of relationships, even if it wasn't weddings or marriages, he fell in love with Siren, and then they got it on. And then it turned out it was Typhoid Mary. And is one of the most interesting examples of male rape in comics.
Wow.
Mm. Not to bring down or anything, but no, it's true. I mean, people don't really look at it that way or think about it that much, but it was like Deadpool 4, I think it was. Mm. It was really early on in the Joe Kelly run, and like he thinks he's with Siren and he has real feelings for her, and then they wake up together and he's all happy and she uses the image inducer thing. And it's like, surprise! It's me! And he's been fighting her and like she's crazy and it's like she's got a weird obsession with him, and he wakes up and he's like laid out. He's crushed. And that's definitely not consent. So yeah, speaking of all the ways that they messed him up with relationships, that's one of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm off topic of marriage now.
Yes. I want to pivot back to the Mephisto dissolved marriage Spider-Man and Mary Jane. Because Spider-Man, now, you know, because ultimately I think that's one, I mean, there's some marriages that work. I mean, literally, and then also in terms of the whole story.
Yeah.
And like a Reed and Sue, that works, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, even like a Hank and Jan, that works.
Or Lois and Clark.
Yeah, that works, exactly. But, you know, this thing, marrying Peter and Mary Jane, I mean, maybe he could have married Gwen, but, and as a matter of fact, it's little known fact. That's the reason Gwen died, because they didn't know what to do with her. It was like, we've advanced this relationship about as far as we think we can. There's nothing left except getting them married. We don't want to do that. What are we going to do? I know, let's kill her.
Well, and it's also interesting because Mary Jane, to me, is one of those constructs, almost.
Hmm.
She is what you make of her. So, like, if you looked at Mary Jane in that one panel I can never get out of my head where she's dancing, like, the ditziest thing in the background. You know, she's like, oh, it's a party! Yeah. And she's dancing in the background. And Peter is like this scientist who's got a lot of brains and stuff, and she's like this, like,
party girl.
Really not. Well, you know, you can be a party girl and be real smart, but she just doesn't seem very matched. And then Gwen Stacy is more so. She's more like responsible and has like brains and stuff like that. But then when the first Spider-Man movies came out, you know, you could see that she was kind of had a messed up home life, but not necessarily couldn't match Peter in terms of like, you know, talent or brains or whatever. So, but I think Mary Jane being like early on kind of starting out less and then being grown into more, you can kind of make what you will of her, and so some versions of her could be married to Peter and it works. It depends who's writing her, I guess.
Well, I felt that, to me, you know, I grew up more reading Peter and Mary Jane being together than Peter and Gwen. And I think that, you know, that relationship, it seemed right. It seemed like it was that opposite attract type of thing, you know, because it's like Peter is this, you know, he's a scientist and all this stuff. But then at the same time, you know, when they got married, it was in the mid 80s when they got married, it felt like, you know, he was that typical nerd and wanting to get with the hot chick. So, I mean, it was like, hey, this is the revenge of the nerds in the comic book form.
Oh boy.
So,
that's why they did it. They wanted to give nerds hope everywhere.
Yeah,
but they could do that too.
So, and it kind of worked to me. And then I felt like, you know, the things he went through, and especially in that particular issue, it just felt that, you know, I think this was deserving to see, and hopefully it will last a long time, and it's Peter and Mary Jane, you know, forever. That's how I see it.
And on the other hand, healthy relationships should not just be based on the fact that you're a nerd and suddenly the hot chick is interested in you. So
yes, important
I'm
information.
Sorry, but
people.
Like I know it's like, oh, I always dreamed of XYZ. Maybe dream a little higher, you know. Don't just dream about looks. Dream about match.
Well, and you know, that actually makes me think about, and I should have written this down because it's something that I'd wanted to ask you all, because they're characters that we might have wanted to see get married, and then they didn't do it. And I'll tell you what, I'm still smarting over Tony Stark and Bethany Cabe, and you know, because they brought Bethany in, and you know, he had been, yeah, sure, there was Janice Cord and Marianne Rogers and you know, a bunch of these other women, you know, where, you know, women. He'd been like, yeah, you know, and even Pepper, but you know, hey, she was married to Happy, and that was, I mean, I hate the way that they have, you know, screwed that up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but. So Bethany, and she was...
I think they had to simplify it, because Tony had a lot of women, and, you know...
yeah, well, and they were going in that direction, too.
And only a couple of them maybe were remembered, you know, so that maybe they, for the movies, they just had to simplify it to people you would remember, and Pepper was more memorable.
And they go back to pretty much whatever the alpha situation was.
Yeah.
And he liked Pepper,
but
Pepper ultimately preferred Happy, you know? And so, but that's not the way they did it here. But yeah, no, it was, I mean, Bethany had found out that he was Iron Man, and they had a real, in fact, there was at one point she had been, because it could always happen, she had been kidnapped by somebody and he came after her, and you know, they had this really great one-page sequence where he was getting into the armor and she was watching him, and she ultimately handed him the helmet at the end, and you know, they've got like two hearts accepting and all this. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. And then they just messed that up, and I was like, damn, you know, because I wanted to see him settle down. I grant you, this was like back in the early 80s, but you know, I wanted to see him settle down, and you know, I really liked the character, and it was just sad the way that they did him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I actually, the one couple I wanted to see together is, surprise enough, is finally they're kind of together, but depends on how this issue goes, is Batman and Catwoman.
Okay.
Because of the fact that it's like, those two, like I said, I like the opposite attract situation. And those two, I mean, the movie, you know, Batman Returns, I saw that chemistry between Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing it in the comic books, their relationships just grew to a point where it's like, I can see them together.
I can agree with that. And they're more on equal footing.
Right.
It's not like Batman and Catwoman, both attractive people, both have their own skill sets, both, you know, but they just have those differences that might make a marriage interesting.
Right.
Not completely once, like, off balance, you know?
I'm going to be the contrarian in this one.
Hey.
I don't think that they should be married. And here's why. So, in my mind, the best depiction of pretty much all of the Batman heroes and rogues gallery is the animated series, the Paul Dini stuff, because I feel like it's the truest to all of the characters that we've seen thus far. And there's a moment in one of the episodes where Batman and Catwoman have this moment where you're just like, oh, wait a minute, something might happen. And then Batman snaps the cuffs on him. Because Batman, obviously, as Bruce Wayne, is attracted to women, and he loves women, and he may get married, but you know what Batman is married to? Justice.
Morality. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's where it could all go wrong. It depends on what evolution of Catwoman you've got. You know, has she decided to be a different kind of Catwoman? Mm.
Well, you know, on Earth 2, they got married, and they had a baby, and she grew up to be the Huntress. Mm-hmm. And then they messed that up, you know, with this whole crisis thing.
Comics, all messing sudden, things up since the dawn of time.
You know, and all of a sudden she was some mobster's kid. And I'm like, no, Helena Wayne. Right. She's the daughter of Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah.
That was a really great thing. So,
but now here's one that I actually I'm going to go to the TV shows now at this point, and I'm going to go to everybody's favorite with Smallville, because I don't know, you know, I like to pull that one out every once in a while. But Ollie, Green Arrow, and eventually Chloe, Watchtower.
Oh.
And what I liked about that one, and we will just talk about the characters, not the actors in this instance, because, you know, there's some scandals going on, but not with Justin Hartley. he's cool, as far as I know. But they developed Chloe's character from something very different in the beginning to something very different at the end, not the end, but towards the like later seasons where they're all adults. And she becomes a part of the team and turns into a person that everyone kind of relies on. She sort of has been in certain aspects throughout the show, but then towards the end is like more the person that can identify with and understand what they're going through, but isn't necessarily like always out there in the field, but she's still got her own power set, even if it's technology some of the time. And then, like, it turns out that she and Ollie have formed an understanding of each other's personalities over time. And you kind of, it grows, and you don't necessarily see it right at first. You know, it's not like there's immediate chemistry. It's not like he's, you know, it's not like when he's dating Lois and stuff like that, and they're doing yoga and being all flirty and whatever. memorable scene. But, you know, Justin Hartley, shirtless Justin Hartley. But they, they get to know each other and they kind of hang out, and it turns out that she understands him more than he realizes, and they become a couple and, you know, build a life together. And that's really interesting, because at the beginning it wasn't anything I wanted, and then the writers kind of made it happen. I thought that was cool.
I'll give you another television couple that I liked their wedding, and the one that I felt like it should never happen. The one I liked was Jackson Worf on DS9. Their relationship, it didn't see, you know, when Worf came on, it felt like he had something to do, and let's give him something to do. But then him and his relationship with Dax felt like it was very genuine, very subtle, and it built up to something great. And sadly, seeing her die and him embracing that, you know, it felt that relationship was very keen. The one I felt like should have been never happened was, surprise enough, Riker and Troy. I just felt like
that was in the movies.
I know. But throughout the series, they felt like everybody wanted them together. But in the end, when they finally got together and became married, and I just felt like, I wasn't feeling that.
Yeah, but that's because Nemesis sucked.
All right, but I gotta throw one more out there, and I'm going to do the indie comics thing, because, you know, I feel like I want to do this. I was talking to my fella, Tom, and I was like, oh, comic book superhero weddings. And he's like, well, Love and Capes, which is by Tom Zoller, and shows an interesting and healthy relationship throughout the story. So I'm going to do that because I have the power of the radio, and throw out that that was a healthy relationship written, where also the marriage, once they were into the actual wedding, nothing went wrong.
Wow.
Which was interesting.
Yeah.
So there you go. But not necessarily one of the big DC Marvel superheroes we've talked about.
No, certainly not. Well, okay.
Throw that in there.
And I'm also, since you threw that in, I got to mention The Incredibles, because Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible.
Everybody mentioned The Incredibles. Yeah. I love those movies. They're so great.
All right.
Jack.
Yeah, you know? Okay. Well, hey, look, that's going to just about do it for us today, because of course, Sounds of the City is live, and J.A. the DJ is outside. He is waving, and he's trying to get in here, so we're going to have to yield the booth just a couple of minutes early. But I want to thank all of my wonderful guests, Brian Lyles, of course, Mike Lunsford, who had a tough time getting a word in edgeways here today.
And, I like listening to you guys, honestly.
And Emily Witten, thank you so much. Of course, Fantastic Forum is also a television show. You can, if you happen to be in the Arlington, Virginia area, you can tune in tonight on Arlington Independent Media, Comcast Channel 69, Verizon Fios Channel 38 at 8 p.m. And we're in a variety of other areas. Check the website at fantasticforum.tv to find the viewing time in your area. We also re-air now Wednesday afternoons at 5 p.m. if you want to check this show out again. Or you can come back next week. Same bat time, same bat station. Have a wonderful rest of the weekend, people, and enjoy Sounds of the City coming up next. Woo.